Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross with you once again. An auspicious moment in our, well, second half of our interactions here, where we have been specifically a podcast because we are up to episode number 99, one away from 100, and we're going completely without a net and without a script this time around, as we have done so many times in the past. Rob, what's going on?
Nothing. I'm just relaxing and enjoying a quiet Sunday afternoon. You know, yesterday was a day of preparation, quote unquote, anticipating a snowstorm that thankfully never happened. And I'm very glad that it didn't. But, you know, we braved the crowds, the madness of the grocery store, you know, people being completely uncivil.
Yeah.
And, you know, here I am just chilling out and waiting for football to start because I have no dog in the hunt and there's nothing else on TV right now. Hockey is now on its official break for the All-Star Game, of which I don't like All-Star Games. I don't even like the baseball All-Star Game anymore. But I will say this much. In a season where, as you and our listeners well know, I have nothing but complaints, wait for it, break them up. The New York Rangers have actually won three games in a row, two of them against actually good teams. They beat the Chicago Blackhawks, and then they beat the Boston Bruins.
Yeah. Well, I'm not talking about hockey now because after earlier this season where the Sabres ripped off 10 wins in a row, they've really done absolutely nothing since then and have skidded into last place where everybody figured that they would be anyway. So I'm not even paying attention anymore. I'm like you. I'm just waiting for some good football this afternoon, and then we'll figure out who's going to be in the Super Bowl by nightfall.
And exactly. And the fact that, you know, okay, we're now past the halfway mark of January. So that can only mean we're getting closer to spring. And the end of February is when pitchers and catchers report to spring training. So praise the Lord, baseball's coming back soon.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, you know, something happened this week. And I, because, well, for obvious reasons, I can't give too many specifics on this. But it's funny what life does to you sometimes. Because in my own search for gainful employment once again, there have been some moves made, and to not put too fine a point on it, when you're waiting, and radio is like this a lot because there's so few jobs and so many of us who like to do this for a living, that when, you know, sometimes you find yourself waiting for something that you can't control, where what happens with somebody else's job will directly affect whether or not you get your next gig. That's kind of the position that I'm in right now. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, something happened this week, and I put in for a job almost as an afterthought. I mean, it's the kind of job that I would like to have, but I didn't really put too much stock in it because it's a company I had tried to get in contact with before about a different job and never really hooked up with them, never got any interest at all. And so I just figured out, well, I'll fire off another application and at least it'll look good to the unemployment people. So I did that. And within hours on Thursday, I got a phone call, and it was a very good phone call. It was a very productive phone call, and it's still a very preliminary thing. I don't think that this is going to turn into a job for me come next Monday, but stranger things have happened, you know, radio being what it is. But it was funny that something that I wasn't expecting to turn into very much of anything all of a sudden turned around and has now at least become an ongoing interest and something that, who knows, could turn into something really cool for me in the not too distant future.
Well, while you're being coy about it, I will just smile and keep my fingers crossed and hope for the best. And, you know, whatever it is you're going to do, as long as you're happy with it and you're being paid properly,
yeah,
all that really matters.
Right. And the thing is, I think you can do this with anything, especially when a job change involves a move, and mine almost assuredly will. I mean, there's a chance something could open up in St. Louis, but I'm not going to hold my breath. So with a job change that involves a move, you can always find good things about it and a reason why it would be a good fit. But the good thing is that I don't have to try too hard with either one of these possibilities to figure out why either of them would be a very good fit. So, like I said, I've been in worse positions before. This is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, that's to be in the fortuitous position of being able to juggle the possibility of, do I want this job or this job? That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's very rare. It's happened to me maybe once or twice, which is a blessing and then some.
Yep.
But so, you know, there's also something really positive in its own way for moving. You know, when you've gone through the mill and the grinder of living in a certain place for too long a period of time, and you've had the jobs there, and there's really, you've gone through every, proverbial avenue that you can. Why not have something new? You're young enough.
Right. At least I like to tell myself that I am. But that's the moving hey, for I'm me.
Remember, it's the words of wisdom from an elder, for fuck's sake.
But yeah, moving for me, for whatever reason, and maybe because I've done it so bloody many times, has never been as stressful as it seems to be for a lot of people. I'm not kicking anybody in the teeth, but it's I realize that the house that I'm living in now, I've been here for 16 years, and that's four times longer than I've ever lived in any under any one roof ever up until now. 4 years was my record up until 16 years ago. So I got used to it, and it was never that big a deal of, okay, I'm going to live in a different house or maybe even in a different city.
I'm coming up March 1st. On technically 23 years in this building. I'm on my fifth apartment in this building. There was a year and 9 months in which we moved out of this building. We moved to Jersey, to the town of Union, and then moved back to this building, to a different apartment. So all in all, even with that interruption, 23 years.
Yeah.
Right? But I still lived in the house that I, quote, grew up in for 24 years, because I was two when we moved from Brooklyn to Staten Island. So the house I grew up in, I moved out when I was 26. So, 24 years. So I'm coming up pretty close on having tied my own record. I remember when we moved out to New Jersey. Everything was going great until the physical day of the move, and then the moving company screwed everything up so seriously that it became unnecessarily stressful. They had allegedly a truck accident on the bridge with the truck that was coming to get our stuff. So instead of sending out the next truck behind it in the queue, they just bumped us, and they weren't going to come and get us that day until I started screaming bloody murder, and it took me almost the entire day to get them to send a truck out there. They showed up 12 hours late.
Ugh.
So they showed up at around 9 o'clock.
At night.
Yes. And moved our stuff, and we were moved into the new place in Union at around 1:30 in the morning. So everything was just, instead of them delivering and putting things where they were supposed to go during the span of the day, it was just put it here and get the fuck out.
Yeah.
However, the move back was just the exact opposite, because as we did with this when we planned it all in advance, everything was boxed and ready. At the point when we were ready to move back, I had just bought the RAV4. So we very wisely brought back a lot of the things that we could in advance that we weren't going to need. Our superintendent, who is a wonderful person and the one who very quickly and firmly convinced us to come home, he said, here's the keys well in advance. Do what you need to do to get yourselves set back up again. So we brought all the kitchen stuff that we weren't going to use. I even brought the guitars and stuff, because for the couple of weeks, I just wasn't going to be doing anything. That was half the battle won. Come the day of the move, the movers showed up at exactly on time. And it was a crew of three guys who just moved like a machine. And by maybe 9:45, they had cleared out the balance of everything.
Nice.
And we got to the apartment. They had already had enough time to stop and have a coffee break while they were doing the movie. I kid you not, they were gone. Everything was placed where we wanted it to be placed. They were gone by about 12:40 p.m.
Yeah.
Between 9 and 12:40, the move took place, and everything was where it needed to be. We stopped after they left. We went down the street to our favorite pizzeria, which was, our local joint. We hadn't been there since we moved. We walk in and they go, where have you been? And we said, we moved to New Jersey and we just moved back today. They were like, well, welcome home. Lunch is on us. And after that, we went home. We had the food. While we ate, we broke down boxes and put everything away. And by 11 o'clock, everything was done. I woke up the next – I fell asleep on the couch because Liz had fallen asleep early. I fell asleep on the couch, and ironically, when I first moved into this building, right, we didn't have cable set up yet, so I had to listen to the Rangers playing the Maple Leafs at the Garden, which the Rangers won. Wouldn't you know it, on this particular night, the Rangers are playing the Maple Leafs at the Garden.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, I had to listen to it. I'm laughing to myself. I fall asleep on the couch, and I wake up the next morning, which is a Friday, and I go, where am I? And then I look around, and I go, oh, my God, I'm home.
I'm home. Yeah, right. Oh, well, see, when we moved out of our apartment in Nashville into a house, the house was maybe a mile away from where the apartment was. And it was an ill-fated move to begin with because we were in the house for less than a year before I lost that job. So, you know, radio, coming to call once again. But the funny thing was, the day that we moved out of the apartment, and I did it all myself, I rented a U-Haul truck because I figured it's not that far. I'm not going to pay somebody hundreds of dollars to move me a mile from here. I'll do it. So I went and got this big box truck from U-Haul. And I backed it up and started to load stuff out of the apartment and into the truck. And I think it took three trips all told, and it took an entire day. But it just so happened that that was the hottest day in Nashville that year. Oh. It was 104 degrees. I want to tell you, I mean, when I started, I was wearing a pair of cargo shorts and a bright red Tampa Bay Buccaneers t-shirt. It was just a t-shirt and a pair of shorts. And by the time I got done that night, when I took the last box out of the truck and put it into the new house in Nashville, it was actually a town called Antioch, Tennessee. That t-shirt weighed about 6 pounds, and it was hanging down below my knees. Sweat. You had just, taken this thing, and it absorbed all of it, so I'll give it credit for that. But man, I don't think that t-shirt was ever the same after that.
Yeah. I've bounced between apartments in this building, but there was nothing more rewarding than that return from New Jersey.
That's cool.
Because what started out on such a negative note,
yep,
after all the planning and everything, it ended on such a wonderful high, because that morning, that first morning that we were back, Liz went into the city to pick up her paycheck. I had the day off from work, and in that time frame, the cable guy came. The gas company came, the electric company came, took care of everything within like maybe 20 minutes of one another showing up.
Yeah.
And by the time she came back, we drove back to Jersey, did a quick sweep of the union apartment, made sure everything was neat and clean, dropped off the keys with a sigh of relief, then went over to Comcast to drop off the box for the cable there, because those guys were the biggest bunch of incompetents and criminals I ever saw.
Yeah.
And then we went to have a celebratory lunch to say, thank you, Lord, we are no longer living in New Jersey.
Yep.
And I think that's probably the biggest reward of all, not living in Jersey anymore.
Yeah, well, the good news for me is no matter which one of these jobs, if either one of them comes through, I won't be living in New Jersey. So I've got that going for me. But we'll keep you posted on that and let you know if anything big happens over the next couple of days. There has been some...
I just want to say this. What bothers me so much about that is the fact that three of the people I love most, two of them are New Jersey natives.
Yeah.
And the other one grew up in New Jersey. But I'm sorry, you shouldn't be from there. It's not proper. It's a bad place. You only have exits.
Yeah. Yeah, that is tough because, I mean, the city where I grew up is the butt of every joke about a city, especially if it involves snow. So, I mean, Buffalo at one point was a thriving metropolis. It hasn't been in about 80 years. But even there, it's got a personality. It's a city. It has a vibe, and New Jersey to me is just flat and same. And yeah, there's nothing that distinguishes New Jersey. There's nothing that makes me go, you know what? I would love to go to New Jersey for, I can't finish that sentence. There's nothing there.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
That's why there's silence. Right. I'm trying. You know what? Bruce Springsteen. Okay. All right. We'll, I know we're going to stretch it, but here we go. And that, think about it this way. It's what got you and I here a night in Jersey.
Yeah.
But, and here's the but, that venue is now closed. But for the many years that Maxwell's existed,
mm-hmm,
there was something, a reason to go to Jersey.
Yeah. And even before that, in a slightly different musical world, I guess, you have City Garden, and we talked about the death of City Garden as well.
Right. Very thick. You know, we thinking about it, you know, we reviewed the book that was written about City Gardens years ago. We did that on Overnight America. Can we say Overnight America? Is that trademarked by CBS?
It probably is, but I don't care about those people.
Yeah, CBS Radio doesn't exist anyway. But, you know, were it not for New Jersey, we would not be here, come to think of it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because of my night in Hoboken on the last night of Maxwell's. And like I said, one of the people I love most in this world is a friend of ours, a friend of this show, a friend of Pop Dose, a friend of Overnight America. Cindy Dawson is a New Jersey native, and we love her to death.
Yeah.
So, okay. It's got its good points. All right.
But most of them live in New York now.
Move out of New Jersey. Come to New York. Just cleanse your soul.
Exactly. Well, we also, there has been movement for whatever it's worth, and we edged into this a little bit during the last show, but the speech that Donald Trump gave yesterday, trying to get a compromise for the wall, and the further this government shutdown goes on, the more people just are sick of hearing about it. And I mean, sick of hearing about that aspect of it, thinking that a political fight over whether or not there's going to be funding for a border wall that very few people want, has led to this many people being tossed out of work. It's idiotic. There's no other word for it. So
criminal.
Yeah.
That's the only word.
Yeah, that's very true. So it's not that anything has moved there, but it was interesting to see the reaction to his speech, not necessarily from the Democrats, because again, this stuff is all scripted. We knew what he was going to say before he said it. We knew what they were going to say about it before they said it. There was no surprise in any of this. The one little bit of surprise, and it wasn't, you know, I guess if you pay attention, it wasn't that shocking, is that his base is pissed. They're really, really upset about the speech he gave yesterday because he said, well, we'll give you 3 more years of DACA and we'll give you 3 more years of TPS, and made concessions to keeping people who are here without documentation longer than they would be anyway, and offered that as a concession. So Ann Coulter was the first one, but she was by far not the only one who stood up and started railing against him. And I believe her quote was, "We voted for Trump and got Jeb." So, you know, if anything moves the needle on this thing, it may very well be the fact that he's now, despite himself, pissing off his own base.
3 more years of TPS reports?
Yes, right. That's right. Did you? You know, we got a new cover sheet for those. I don't know if you saw it, but did you get that memo?
I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
Oh, don't get me started on Office Space. But yeah, he can't help it. I mean, he's in a situation right now where no matter what he says, it's going to cost him, and it's going to cost him significantly politically, and he needs to realize that, and there's only one way out of this maze, and he doesn't seem like he's ready to take it yet, but there's, I mean, how much more can he do?
Prosecution or suicide? Yeah.
Either one would be fine.
The thing is, though, and you can make of it what you will, he's already backed himself into a corner where he just can't get out of it. Yesterday was the first time I saw something that, for all intents and purposes, smelled like an attempt at compromise, which he hasn't been willing to do before.
Right.
The thing is that somebody has to say, okay, I'll meet you halfway. Let's sit down and discuss it. Nobody even wants to go to the table with him.
Right.
And this is why I have a problem with Pelosi and Schumer. But again, it'll go back. It goes back to what you and I said in show number 98, that this looks like the setup for that's going to be the White House run in 2020.
Yeah. Well, and it's not so much, I mean, their defense of themselves, and there is some truth to this, and I'm not saying that it's still the right thing to do, because I don't think it is, but their defense is, okay, let's say we take him at his word. We take him at his word, and we take that compromise, and we give him the money for the wall, and we get this DACA deal for the next 3 years where he won't screw with anybody. Every time he has made a deal like that, he's gone back on it. And he's full of shit. We know he's full of shit. So if we can't trust that he's making an offer in good faith and that he's going to come through on his end of it, why would we sign that deal?
It's a good question. But then again, we can't trust any of them.
Right.
I hate to say it, but we can't. Yeah. They have proven themselves time and time again to be, you know, backpedalers of the worst order.
Yep.
You know, if the Democratic Party leaders gave a damn and their first priority should be the people who, as we talked about in the last show, their first priority should be the people who are currently furloughed.
Yeah.
Those people need money.
Right.
Those people need help. Services need to be restored. This is a domino effect of the worst order. And grandstanding against Trump. Look, if you have the so-called majority, which you really don't anyway because you don't have the Senate, you need to get something done. And you need to get something done fast within the framework of both the Senate and the House.
Right.
And you're going to have to leapfrog past Trump to get things moving again. And no one's done that.
No. And everybody knows what the situation is. So if everybody knows what the situation is, why isn't it easier to see the path forward?
You know, because everybody knows what the situation is.
Right. But I mean, when the Democrats know McConnell's not going to move, because if he does, he's in deep shit. Then he'll have no credibility in the Senate and he'll have no pull with Donald Trump. So they know he can't move. So why do they keep trying to expect that the impossible is going to happen? Same thing is true on the right. Donald Trump knows the situation that he's in. On some level, he understands he does not have control of the House and he can't do anything without them. So in that case, why isn't he making a real offer here? You know, why isn't it something significant? And it just, it's more political bullshit to just delay and try to win the PR game here. And that's the worst part of politics.
Well, the thing is, you know, and on the side of the left, you know that they have that one little tiny wedge of power.
Right.
So they're going to play it and run it into the ground and damn anybody who gets hurt in the way.
Yep.
In the process, you know, it is a political game. And that's what I can't stand about it anymore. And let nobody dare say to you or I, well, you know, Bernie Sanders or Social Democrats. No. Because these are first of all, these people have no idea what they're talking about on any kind of topic. We've already seen this.
Right.
We've already heard it. They've already proven themselves to be unworthy to sit in the House of Representatives to begin with.
Yeah.
Okay. But they just have no desire to make any of the longstanding systems of the United States government work. They want to destroy the whole thing. This is not paranoia. This is not somebody who's a raging conservative or a gun-toting Republican or even a screaming lefty who grew up in a different era. This is somebody who sees it for what it is. These people are charlatans. These people are political poison. If you want to have continual unrest and upheaval in a political system that's already damaged beyond at points repair, allow more of these people to have a seat at the table and watch how quickly this country turns into an all-out civil war.
Right. Well, and the furloughed workers, and this is the worst part about all of it, is that the furloughed workers themselves, this argument has nothing to do with them. They don't have a dog in this fight. And there are, now granted, there are government workers who have some connection to what happens on the border. But overwhelmingly, when we're talking about the 800,000 people who are out of work at the moment, or who are working and not getting paid for it, they have no connection to this. These are just people who want to go do their jobs. And so in a fight over something that does not involve them, they get their money taken away. And whether they get it back later on or whatever is immaterial when the rent comes due this month. And if we've got both sides talking about this could go months into the future, you're going to start seeing people get kicked out of their apartments, get kicked out of their houses, who just want to go to work and do their job and get their paycheck like the rest of us do. That's horrible.
And they're basically thumbing their nose at what they're turning into collateral damage.
Right.
You know, these are the people who, whatever political side of the fence that they're on, voted all of you collectively into an office. And all you're doing is feeding the flames that, look, the government really doesn't care.
Yep. Well, you know, at least we've got a Gillette commercial to argue over.
God, you know, this is more the pacification about, you know, I'm going to take the side of, you know what, enough with the man bashing already, because it's tedious. It really is. It's a fucking razor. I have a problem because I don't talk to my razor. You know that.
Right.
Everybody knows that, you know. But come on. It's a fucking commercial. It's shoving down the throats a political point to sell a product. pandering will get you nowhere with me.
Right.
Well, stupid commercial. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it goes hand in hand with some of these other bullshit commercials that have started cropping up, and I've had my fill. I'm not buying your product because of these commercials, just to spite you.
And that's
to buy your tampons.
I look at it just completely from a 10 steps back kind of perspective on this and go, it's a TV commercial. I don't give a shit. I just don't. It's what they say, and the bent of the ad is this stuff has been swept under the rug for a long time, bullying and sex harassment, all of that. And it's stopping now, or at least people are making strides toward getting it stopped. But it's up to men to go one step beyond. We can't just go, okay, things are changing, I guess we're okay now. We have to take an active role. And when you see things happening that you can stand in the way of, you stand in the way of it. There's nothing wrong with saying that. I don't need Gillette to tell me that necessarily, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a TV commercial. It's their time. They paid for it. What do I care?
Well, they're also aligned with the New England Patriots. You should.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And so for that, I will never forgive them. But yeah, I mean, just the fact that so many people took so much time, as though Gillette was somehow, going into their house and kicking their dog and knocking over all their furniture. It just, come on, stop. It's manufactured outrage, and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't amount to anything at all.
Now, we're going to go on to a much more fun topic of things.
Let's.
As I start, because I'm ready to go from buoyant, and I'm going to set this up for you, to foaming at the mouth, which is how everybody likes me to perform on this show. But you will understand within minutes. Okay, so first of all, have you heard of or started watching this new show on Fox called The Masked Singer?
I know of it, and I've seen the promos. I have not watched a single episode of it.
Okay, confession. I've had a lot of fun watching this over these first, I think, 3 episodes.
Okay.
Okay. The panel, with the exception of Ken Jeong, are dopes. Jenny McCarthy, some woman named Nicole Scherzinger.
Okay.
And Robin Thicke. Okay, Robin Thicke, who had to pay out of the nose for having ripped off Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye, yep.
Like, I think he has to say, I'm really going to take it at face value. But Ken Jeong is hilarious. Nick Cannon is the host. I immediately got the feeling that it's like C and D list celebrities or former celebrities who actually get up and sing in these costumes, and their voices are altered so you can't really tell who they are when they're talking.
Okay.
The first episode, the very first singer was a guy who came out. And the thing is, you try to figure out who it might be through the clues that are given and shown. The very first performer, just to give you the perfect example, was somebody who said that he was older, that he had done Vegas, that he had done theater, that he'd once been a teeny bopper. And the alarm bells went off immediately. And his parting statement on the first show was, it's been a really long time since your mom might have had a poster of me on her wall. And I just looked at Liz and I said, that's fucking Donny Osmond.
Yeah, uh-huh, right.
Then this guy got up and started singing, and I knew it was Donny Osmond. But we were off and running, and it was a lot of fun. There was a woman, I think the character she came out as was a raven. The guesses that the panel were throwing at her was she had said she likes to talk. So, were you a talk show host? But then she mentioned that she had a very painful tragedy, come into her life recently. And I remembered reading Ricky Lake's husband or ex-husband committed suicide.
Okay.
And this person was obviously not a trained singer. So that was my next guess. They had on a character that was, I forgot what he was, a pineapple. And there were a bunch of references that it took me a minute to process, but Liz guessed immediately. And she said, it's Tommy Chong.
Okay.
This person wasn't a singer.
I saw him take the mask off, so I knew that, yeah, he was one of them.
It was another one. And on this past week's episode, they had a two-time returner, somebody dressed up as a deer, who was older. He intimated that he'd taken a lot of falls. So people thought he was a wrestler.
Okay.
But, you know, he had won a lot of trophies, and they had him sitting at a desk with a lot of trophies around him, and he had a very distinctive Southern twang. And then he came on the stage and he sang a country song, actually, which he was much better the second time than the first time, because they relegate the worst three performances to the bottom, and the one who gets the least votes gets to unmask. But they're talking to him, and he threw a loop at them because he said, you know, something about got into horses. And when he said horses, okay, who's an older quarterback who played for a horse team and has a Southern accent? And I said immediately, Peyton Manning,
yep.
Because he played for both the Broncos and the Colts. But then I thought, could it have been Troy Aikman, who played for the Cowboys?
Uh-huh.
Somebody said Brett Favre because, again, the Southern accent. But then this guy laughed. And Liz immediately said, that's fucking Terry Bradshaw.
Okay. See, that's where and I was thinking it was Terry Bradshaw.
And it was Bradshaw. So it's been a lot of fun so far. And the funniest thing is that so far my two main guesses of Ricky Lake and Donny Osmond are out there on the what do you call it? The interwebs. So and another one that I guessed at was a younger female who is not a trained singer, but is from a very famous family.
Okay.
And I took a shot in the dark. I said, it's one of the Willis kids. It's either Rumor or Tallulah or maybe Scout. It's one of one of Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's kids.
It's not one of those idiot Kardashians, is it?
People were saying that, but I don't think so.
Okay.
And so I hope not. But check it out. You might actually have some fun now. Notice how quickly I did the turn.
Yes.
Because now this is going to jump ugly because you know where I'm about to go with this one. As I take my Bible with one hand and my sword with the other, this atrocity, this disgusting, repugnant, vile, insufferable, insulting nightmare of a new series on MTV called Made in Staten Island.
Oh, yeah. I remember you lamenting that before it had aired. And now that it has, what's the deal?
It is the brainchild, of course, of Karen Gravano, who is the daughter of Sammy the Bull Gravano. And she was one of the stars of Mob Wives. This is her only way, I guess, to get a job.
Okay.
By pitching this garbage to MTV. And her daughter is in this. Her daughter, who did not grow up on Staten Island, but grew up in Arizona. With four of the fakest, most overdone attempts at what they think a Staten Island accent is. I can tell you right now, John, that most people that might have had, and I'm using this in very big, bold neon letters, might have had a semi-Staten Island dialect. Most of them have died by now.
Uh-huh.
Because we are such a mixed borough. I have lived in this borough for 52 years. Do you hear any kind of weird accent or delivery or
no.
No, right. Because we don't sound like these people. And, you know, the use of cliche names like, you know, you can't trust nobody on Snake Island. First of all, no one's ever referred to Staten Island as Snake Island. I'm sorry. You can call us Shaolin because we represent Wu-Tang. You can call us the Forgotten Borough. You can call us the inflamed boil between New Jersey and New York. You can call us the home of the Staten Island dump. But Snake Island?
Yeah.
Seriously?
No.
It's just these five Nimrods. See, I can't even count straight when it comes to them. I thought MTV could not get any worse. MTV/VH1, since Mob Wives was on VH1. They have finally hit bottom. This is it. This is bottom. You know, I thought Catfish was the worst of MTV.
Yeah.
No. This is a bigger dick that they've sucked on because this is just abhorrent. I mean, abhorrent. And I'm insulted as a human being. Never mind a Staten Islander. I'm insulted as a person. You know, what you are doing with these people are playing up to a stereotype that I find absolutely unacceptable and reprehensible and equally racist. you know? And I don't want to hear the bullshit that, well, Karen Gravano, no, you know what? She's out there to make money, so she's going to exploit Italians. I don't have any Italian blood in me, but I know how it feels to be stereotyped.
Do you?
I don't care for it. Yeah, you know, believe it or not, I do. You know, I'm a man, remember?
Yeah,
man,
yeah, that's true.
And rapist. All I do is go, I should be a fucking Viking. I can rape and pillage my way through life, you know? Take whatever woman I want and have done with it.
I thought you already did that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, I know the show is crap, but there actually are some good things going on TV as well, because we got into, because the internet is what it is, I'm really starting to get irritated with the whole Netflix streaming series thing where they'll put out 10 episodes and call that a season, and then we'll see you in a year and a half. We talked about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel a couple of episodes ago, and I really do like that show. It's a very charming and funny take on a totally unrealistic look at the early 60s, but doesn't matter. It's still an entertaining as hell show. But now I'm done with season two, and it's going to be another year before season three happens. It's the same thing with what they did with Stranger Things. Okay, great. Now that season's over, and we got to wait another year and a half for them to make it. And I know there's a lot of production that goes into that show, but still, I don't like waiting that long and then coming back to it. However, it does make life a lot easier in my cord-cutting ways for those of us who have done that to go back and find series that we missed. Because we've talked about this before. I've never seen a single episode of Game of Thrones. I've never seen a single episode of Breaking Bad. There's all of these shows that just, you know, were huge when they were. I never saw, I think I saw two episodes of The Sopranos. So I know. Well, I know, right? So now we're starting to go back, and you know, they're all on the list, but it's just, you know, the time of day that I was on the radio didn't really lend itself to watching TV, you know, especially prime time. And so I missed out on a lot of this stuff, but in going back, we keep finding these kinds of diamonds in the rough. And there was one that we watched the pilot episode of like 5 years ago, and it's still on. They're still making new ones. But it's a regular network show. I think it's on ABC. And we saw the pilot episode and kind of filed it away and went, that's a good show. We should watch that. And over the last couple of weeks, we've been going back and binging like crazy this show called Speechless. Have you seen this?
It sounds vaguely familiar.
The whole show centers around a kid who has cerebral palsy. And he's in a wheelchair. And he uses this laser pointer device on a board to talk, on a computer board. And he's got a guy who kind of speaks for him, you know, reads what the kid's typing. And in the crazy, cracked family that he's a part of, and the kid is nuts too, which is great. But many, and it's funny. And that's the thing, is it's sarcastic and funny and caustic, and they don't make him a cartoon. They don't say, oh, look, here's a kid you should feel sorry for. Now watch our show. He's just as screwy as the rest of them are. And the mom is played by Minnie Driver, and the dad is the guy who plays Barry Kripke on Big Bang Theory. And the show is fantastic. It's really funny. And again, it's, yeah, I mean, it's network TV, so it's not the edgiest thing in the world. But for what it is, it's a really charming ride. And it's one of those that for 6 years now, we've been piling up episodes, and it's a regular network TV show. So a season is 22 episodes. So there's plenty to watch, you know. I don't have to worry about now. I got to wait another year to get 10 more episodes out of these people.
Interesting. Very interesting. I remember seeing ads for it on, you know, on buses.
Yeah, it's worth it. It really is.
I have to admit, I've not seen a network TV series. You're going to have to give me a minute to think about this, because I don't remember the last time I watched a network TV series.
Yeah.
I unfortunately have gone the way of a lot of people. I watch like real unscripted reality shows like Life PD or The First 48.
Jersey Shore, go ahead.
Shut up. do not mock Jersey Shore. Is wonderful, and we're all, you know, rooting for the situation, because he did start his bid in prison last week, so he'll be there for the next 8 months. Storage Wars.
Yeah, I do like that one.
You know, love me a bit of. You know, you kind of sound like Barry Weiss now that I think about it. All you need are the skull gloves.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that there is some stuff out there that it really does bear watching. And, you know, there's so many choices now that sometimes this stuff gets lost in the shuffle. And then you go back to it. Like Jen just started watching Lie to Me again. And we watched that show. I think they only did 3 seasons, but we watched every episode of that show when it was on. But it's been a few years now. So you go back and it's kind of like watching a new show all over again.
And we just finished watching a good portion, I will say, because there were some seasons worth skipping over, frankly. The Sopranos, because of all the talk of it being the 20th anniversary of the show first airing.
Wow.
And we went back and watched. Like, I don't recall ever seeing the very first episode. And we were both amazed by how, in the very first episode, James Gandolfini had not yet really developed Tony Soprano. He sounds like James Gandolfini. He
right.
does not, because if you heard the two, they are night and day, you know? So it was kind of fascinating to watch the evolution, because there's a moment in that first episode where he gets angry and then he turns into Tony Soprano, the Tony Soprano we know better later on.
Uh-huh.
But just so many of the performances were just so, so amazing, and how downright funny that show was. That's the part that people always overlook. They always talk about the glorification of the mafia and the violence and the this and the that. It's a really funny show. I mean, how much of a ham actor, and I mean ham, is Lorraine Bracco? Oh, Tony, why do you feel this way? You know? How horrible. She is so wooden. It's amazing. And, you know, there are a couple of behind-the-scenes stories that I heard about, you know, scenes that we're watching and we're laughing at, and you can tell that the actors are really, really fighting to not just piss themselves laughing.
Right.
You know, you got to love that.
See,
and that's the fun thing about being able to, if not binge watch, we'll have on demand.
Right. And that's a funny thing too, because you talk about him trying to find Tony Soprano. And if you go back and watch early episodes, there's a couple of TV series that were very, very long running series. And if you watch the first 3 or 4 episodes, I think what was going on is that they were either getting notes from the producer or they were getting notes from the network saying, you need to change this about this character, because the characters change dramatically. If you watch, for example, Andy Griffith, the first season of the Andy Griffith Show, he was a dope. I mean, he was the country bumpkin kind of, you know, didn't really know what was going on. He was not the wizened old family man that they turned Andy Griffith into. He was Andy Griffith's bumpkin character from his albums.
From No Time for Sergeants, too.
Right, exactly. So,
and
it's funny to watch those episodes now and go, what the hell's wrong with Andy? Did he hit his head? You know, and the other one, and I remember seeing the first 2 or 3 episodes back to back one day when TBS was running them or something, of Three's Company. Jack Tripper, in the first few episodes of the first season of Three's Company, was a jerk. He was not lovable and you know, the goofball that he became. He was a jerk who really was trying to take advantage of Janet and Chrissy and all of that, and was not a pleasant person. They made him funny about 4 episodes in, and it totally changed the dynamic of the show.
They took his smarm away and gave it to Larry, who
right.
was less smarmy, but he was the smarmy counterfoil.
Right.
Well, I mean, look at, here's the perfect example, Happy Days. Look at the evolution of that show. Richie and Patsy are on par with each other.
Yep.
You know? And as you watch over the first few seasons, it's always Richie, like the first 2 seasons, really, Richie and Patsy. But then in comes Ralph Malph as a third, and then comes Fonzie, who had just been a very marginal character.
Yep.
You know? Out goes Chuck, never to be spoken of again. But then all of a sudden, Fonzie is there. Richie is the conscience of Fonzie in a lot of ways. And then all of a sudden, Patsy's relegated to being an oaf.
Right.
And a really minor character as the show progresses.
And even Fonzie himself changed dramatically from when he was that minor character. He really was a hood. That's what people don't remember, is that he was a bad guy in that show.
Do you remember the stories about how he couldn't wear a leather jacket?
Yes, he had the t-shirt.
They wanted him to wear the leather jacket standards and practices said unless there's a motorcycle.
Right.
So they started to incorporate it to make it more okay. Let's, you know.
Funny stuff. Well, so yeah, it is cool to go back and, you know, that's another reason to watch these things again, because you forget, you get into the characters over time and you forget how much they've changed from the pilot episodes of a lot of these shows. So yeah, fun stuff there as well. Oh, and by the way, I have to pat myself on the back because one of my favorite things, and part of the reason I love watching Jeopardy so much, is that there are those rare occasions where all three of the contestants get the final Jeopardy answer wrong, or the final Jeopardy question wrong. And on those days, if I can pull off getting the question when none of the three of those idiots on TV did, I feel like I've really accomplished something. And that happened on Friday. So Friday, I'm going to hit you with this. I'm going to see if you can pull this one out. And I
love about you, John, you, like me, have such low standards.
Exactly. It's the little things in life. So I'm going to see if you can pull this one out, Rob Ross, because I know you haven't seen this episode yet. Here is the final Jeopardy answer for this past Friday in the category TV personalities. And I was kind of amazed that none of them got it. In 2000, this man was the host of a number one rated network TV show and a number two rated syndicated talk show. Now you got to put yourself back in 2000 to get this, because that was what tipped it for me. Is I remembered what I was doing in 2000 and what everybody was talking about on TV. There's one other clue that I can give you that will definitely tip it for you.
Okay.
The number one rated network TV primetime show was a game show.
I don't really watch game shows, and I don't.
No, but in the year 2000, there was one game show that started on TV. It was an American ripoff of a British TV show. And
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yep. Regis Philbin.
So, I almost said that, but you know what I kept flashing back at? Pat Sajak.
Yeah, right. Because you're right. He did have a TV talk show as well, but I don't think it did very well.
Oh, it was the disaster of all disasters for CBS, which made them hesitant to go after Leno or Letterman.
Right, right.
They took a bloodbath on that. But then I kept seeing Ralph Benershka. Do you remember that debacle?
Yes, I do. The former NFL kicker. Back when kickers were the guys with the funny names. Now kickers have regular names and all the rest of the guys have weird names.
No, Garo Yepremians.
Garo Yepremian. Fouad Rivaiz. Remember him?
Kittle a kicker?
No, he was a quarterback. There was also a guy who played one season in the NFL and then went to the U.S. not the USFL, indoor football, whatever the league was, and played. He was the kicker for the Tampa Bay Storm and had the best name ever. The dude's name was Zenon Andrazician. So, yeah, right. What are some other great...
game shows to me, I
Bjorn Nitmo, anyone?
Wow, I don't. I'm trying to play.
He played for the Giants. Yeah, well.
You know what? It's funny. While the gap was on, I could hear the Jeopardy music in my head while I was trying to answer the question.
Trying to come up with Regis, yeah.
Because I can't stand Regis Philbin. I hate that. I've always hated him. I also hate Kathy Lee Gifford or whatever her name is.
Uh-huh. Right. You know? And back then it still was Regis and Kathy Lee. It wasn't Kelly Ripa yet.
Ugh. And I remember when Kelly Ripa first burst onto whatever soap opera she came onto because she was adorable.
Yeah.
You know, I have no beefs with Kelly Ripa whatsoever. So that's not a problem for me. but God, I hate Regis Philbin. I've always hated Regis Philbin. He's always irritated me, so I would not have watched. Well, certainly I didn't watch. What do you call it? I didn't watch. You know, whatever the hell that morning show is.
And, yeah.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? The only one I could picture doing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is Meredith Vieira.
Right. Yeah, because she came in second. She came in after he took off. But yes. So
continued on with her in primetime.
Yeah, and for a time.
Daytime version of it as well, which I think is on in reruns.
Yes.
I don't think new episodes.
No. And I think, yeah, they tried it in syndication with a couple of different hosts, but it never worked. So, but it was fun stuff. And like I said, I got Final Jeopardy and nobody else did.
You said it was a ripoff of a British show, but I was trying to picture who hosted Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And all I kept seeing was Meredith Vieira. That's why the whole
thing. And I don't know. I've never seen the British version of Millionaire, so I don't know who hosts that one. But yeah, it was a very successful show over there. So of course we ripped it off and made our own version. You ready for In Our Heads and we can get off and watch some football? Yeah.
I just don't want to be dealing with the British. Go ahead.
All right. So in the In Our Head segment for this time around, our unscripted 99th episode, we're going to take another current event that by the time you listen to this already will have happened. But after the football is over with tonight, we're going to go outside as long as we can stand it and take a look up in the sky because the moon is going to turn red. Tonight is the night of a lunar eclipse. And I love this stuff. I'm a total space geek and celestial body. I love all of that stuff. I love stargazing and watching satellites whiz by. The fact that we can see satellites go by in the sky to me is just, it's one of the great joys in life. So the lunar eclipse will see the moon pass the full moon, because it has to be, will pass through Earth's shadow. And for about an hour, it's going to be bright red. Now they're calling this the Super Wolf Blood Moon. None of that really means anything, except the wolf moon is just the first full moon, second full moon of the year, I think. First full moon of the year. The blood part comes in from the red color that the moon's going to turn, and the super moon is because this will be its closest point as a full moon in its orbit during the course of this year. So it's nothing you're going to really notice, but it is a little bit closer, and so it'll appear a little bit larger in the sky. This is a really good night to go out and watch it, by the way, as long as it's not dreadfully cold where you are. But we should get a pretty decent view of a nice bright red, and not a dark coppery kind of color, because there's not a whole lot of dust in the atmosphere right now. There haven't been any recent... What really makes the difference with that is volcanic eruptions. And there hasn't been a huge one recently, so it's going to be a nice kind of bright reddy orange color. So you can go out and check that out. And while you're doing that, we're going to use this segment of In Our Heads to give you a little bit of a playlist, because I have my favorite moon songs, and, you know, songs that either have it in the title or mention the moon prominently in them. So, Rob Ross, I'm going to hand this one to you. What's your favorite moon tunes?
How High the Moon, Les Paul and Mary Ford.
Yeah.
Blue, Kentucky. The old Bill Monroe song is done by, of course, the King, Elvis Presley.
Oh, well, the heat was on one moonlight night, stars shining bright, winds blowing high, love saying goodbye. Little moon up Kentucky, keep on shining. Shine on the moon that's gonna let me blue.
The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunny Man. Man on the Moon by R.E.M. No Moon by Pete Shelley. The Moon Fell Down by my band Smile, which was my post the Punchline band in the 90s.
Last night the moon fell down as I walked into the sunrise. A cold and blue and a leaf came swirling like a spinning cyclone storm. A crystalline summer shadow.
Let's talk a little Bad Moon Rising, shall we?
The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore by the Walker Brothers.
Oh, good choice. I mean, you wouldn't think with just that as the subject matter, but I mean, all you have to do really is go down the soundtrack for American Werewolf in London. Every moon song in the world, except for one, because Yusuf Islam wouldn't let him use it. They really wanted Moonshadow in that movie, and he wouldn't let him do it because it was about witchcraft and werewolves and shit. So you look down there, you got Moondance by Van Morrison.
Well, I was going to say, you know, giant steps are what you take walking on the moon.
Definitely. Got to go with the police.
I don't want to give that fucking guy any.
I know, but that's a great song, though.
I know, I know. Of course, Moon River. And of course, come on. How could I not say Marky Moon?
Andy Williams had in his office. When did he die? Like 4 years ago? Something like that? Was it? Huh?
Maybe something like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, it may have even been more recent than that. But I had the opportunity when we did our show in Branson many years ago to go into Andy Williams' office and interview him. And I found that there were two things in that office that I will always remember and associate with him. And every time I hear his voice or hear somebody sing one of his songs, as you just did, I will always think he had a letter, a fan letter, hanging on his office wall from 1966 that he got from John Lennon. John Lennon sat down and typed out and then hand signed a fan letter to Andy Williams. And the other one was a giant, and I want to say it was probably about 3 feet long, and it was under glass. It was a baked potato that was like a stuffed animal. You know, it was like a stuffed baked potato that was made out of cloth and stuff. And he just saw it and liked it. And so he bought this baked potato and had it on display in a case in his office.
Okay. So, listen, this is the guy that gave the world the Osmond Brothers.
Yeah, true.
And Claudine Longet.
Yep.
You know? But he also did one of my favorite songs as a kid, the original version of Can't Get Used to Losing You, which, of course, the English beat did and made even more famous.
Yep.
But okay, we got Marky Moon, because how am I going to forget Television? But how about, let's go on the really fruity side of things, New Moon on Monday.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Am I a cheese ball for saying Sea Moon by Paul McCartney and Wings, which was the B-side of High, High, High?
No, not at all. And I'm going to go right back to, I mean, you talked about going into your wheelhouse last time around. I'll go right back into mine and hit you with a little bit of Roger Klein music, because Roger, in his first album after the Refreshments, did a song with the Peacemakers called West Texas Moon that is a killer track.
Well, I had my best share of the women and I drank my fill of the wine.
Have we exhausted all the ones that are meaningful? Or, I mean, oh God, what about that horrible, like, Vodeo Doe song, you know, it's only a paper moon, you know, the 20s, you know, 23 Skidoo and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
That shit.
And of course, the one that we haven't mentioned, and there were so many different versions of it that became hits, was Blue Moon.
Bom 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 dang 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 for ding it on ding doo.
You saw me standing alone.
You know what? There's the Big Star song Blue Moon, which has nothing to do with Blue Moon.
Right.
Fly me to the moon.
There you go.
See, so the moon lends itself pretty well to some pretty swinging songs.
Definitely.
And if anybody knew how to swing, it was the chairman of the board, baby.
So are you going to go out and look tonight? You going to get a decent view of the moon in New York City? And when you get caught between the moon and New York City, I know it's crazy.
Well,
but it's true.
If that's the best that you can do.
Yes. Christopher Cross. What a way to end it.
And folks, you know what that is? That is a quick, immediate, unplanned shout out to our brethren at Poptos who live for Yacht Rock. Okay? We haven't forgotten you guys.
That's right. So, yes, enjoy the show. Enjoy the lunar eclipse if that's what you're going to do. And Rob Ross, we will look forward to doing this all again next week.
a total eclipse of the rock and roll heart. What can I say? So, everybody have a great week. John, stay well. I will talk to you soon. And thank you all, as always, for listening.